No South African oranges for breakfast, no South African wines for dinner, and no South African teams in international sports competitions. Boycotts, divestment, and sanctions were an important and effective tactic in the struggle to end apartheid in South Africa. More and more people have come to recognize that Israel, too, has created an apartheid system of rule over Palestinians. So it's not surprising that calls for economic sanctions against Israel also are being heard. Erica Lammercraft attended an international conference in Toronto at the end of October as a delegate of Canada-Palestine Support Network. The conference was church-initiated, and it focused on developing a campaign of economic pressures on Israel. And Erica joins me in the studio. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning, Mordecai, and good morning to the Red Eye Collective.
Why is it now that churches are sort of exploring the possibility of economic sanctions against Israel?
Well, it's not a move that has come out of the blue. These churches have been involved in the conflict in Israel and Palestine for decades, and they have consistently taken a position of peace based on justice and based on international law, and repeatedly called on both sides to respect international law, and particularly on Israel to respect international law. And so they have been involved in this, and they're now taking this approach, I think, because they are hoping that to have some practical impact to positively change the situation so that it does take a turn towards justice.
Is there a kind of frustration with the lack of response to what they've been doing heretofore?
Well, they have for nearly 40 years issued, you know, various organizations have issued position papers and calling for an end to Israeli occupation, which they clearly identify as the main problem, the core of this conflict, calling on Israel to end its occupation. And those have gone unanswered and unnoticed as Israel continues to ignore international law and to continue to commit its persistent violations of Palestinian human rights.
Could you tell us some of the churches that are involved in this discussion of economic sanctions on Israel?
It's, you know, despite reports to the contrary, it's quite a growing list. It started with the Presbyterian Church in the U.S. and then was picked up by the World Council of Churches, which has 210 member organizations, member churches around the world. And they called for all of their members to consider economic measures as a way to positively influence this situation so that it does take a turn towards peace and justice. Sabil, which is a Palestinian Christian theology center in Jerusalem, has issued a call for sanctions, boycott, and divestment for people to consider those aspects. In Canada, the United Church of Canada Toronto Conference has been organizing around this issue. The New England Conference of United Methodists, the Anglican Consultative Council, has issued a call for consideration of these as measures. The United Church of Christ, the Lutheran Church in the States, and the Episcopal Church.
So it's quite a range, quite a number of churches, and many of them are quite large churches.
Yes.
What has developed so far out of these discussions for considering economic sanctions? Have they proceeded beyond the general consideration that this should be done, or where are they at? In different churches, perhaps it's different.
It is different. It's a range of responses and how far churches have moved on this issue. And I do want to point out as well, I think it's important to note that these initiatives have very much come from the grassroots of the church. You know, I was doing a little research. I wanted to read what the resolutions were that were passed at the various churches. And so, for example, the General Synod of the United Church of Christ this past summer passed a resolution calling on its member churches to consider economic measures, including divestment. And then on there, they have a web page. And so I saw that specifically, and then I went to their front page, their homepage of their website, and the lead story is that the church leaders commend Condoleezza Rice's leadership on the Israel-Palestine conflict. So, you know, you do see this real difference. The initiatives are very much coming from the grassroots, and quite often, as I heard at the conference that I attended, there is resistance from the church hierarchy, from the church leaders. So, but to get back to your specific question, where are all of these churches? A lot of them have begun just by passing resolutions to look into this matter, to consider the issue more carefully. So that's the case with the Anglican Consultative Council. It was a unanimous decision of that council, which is there to advise the Anglican Church. And so they are looking at proceeding with that. And then you have churches like the U.S. Presbyterian Church, which is more active or has moved farther along with it. And so they are looking at phased selective divestment. So they've actually selected five companies, and they are doing what is called constructive engagement. So they are they've selected five companies that are involved in Israeli occupation, and they are working specifically with them to try and inform them about how their products or services are being used in the occupied territories, what those breaches of international law are, and to work with them to get them to stop selling their products to Israel, for instance. In the case of Caterpillar, that's a big campaign that the Presbyterian Church is involved in. And then in Canada, the United Church of Canada Toronto Conference, they went through an arduous process to have this resolution passed and spent a year educating all the presbyteries in the Toronto Conference before they got a successful resolution passed. And they have just had an implementation plan received as well. So they're proceeding with that.
Now, the Palestinian have also issued a call for economic sanctions against Israel. What Palestinian groups or what part of Palestinian society has issued that call?
Well, the Palestinian civil society issued a call on the first anniversary of the International Court of Justice decision. So that was July 9th, 2005. So it was 1 year after that quite remarkable decision of the International Court of Justice. And so civil society, this was at the time, it was 171 groups, and this list continues to grow. And it represents three important parts of the Palestinian people. It is includes Palestinian refugees, Palestinians living under occupation, and Palestinian citizens of Israel. And so those 171 groups come from these three different parts of the Palestinian people. And again, it's you know, very much a grassroots initiative. It is, you know, the Dentists Association, Palestinian Engineers, YMCA, the YWCA. It's, you know, Palestinian teachers and doctors and lawyers and soccer coaches and moms and dads and, you know, just you and me. It's these people who are just, they have had enough, and they are coming up with nonviolent responses that they can engage the international community with.
You mentioned, it was on the anniversary of the International Court of Justice decision. I assume that's the one on the wall, or judging that the wall is, in fact, illegal and they should be dismantled and so on.
Yes. So that decision was in 2004. And that decision, you know, it does call for the wall to be dismantled and for Israel to pay compensation. But it also takes into account various aspects of the occupation and previous sort of rulings and resolutions on this issue, and it recognizes that the settlements in Gaza, which are now the settlements, are withdrawn, but that East Jerusalem and West Bank are also occupied territories, and that those settlements are illegal.
How would you sort of compare the Palestinian call for boycott, sanction, and divestment with the kind of discussions that are going on in the churches? Are there some issues that arise when you look at both that really are still open for discussion and people should think about?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of issues that are that will be resolved within the communities, how different people think they can most effectively work in their own particular circumstances and within their own communities, taking into consideration the various aspects of the work and the people that they're working with. So the Palestinian call, for instance, it calls for respect of international law and dismantling of the wall. And it calls for the recognition of equal rights for all citizens in Israel, Palestinian Israelis and Jewish Israelis. And it calls for the right of return for Palestinian refugees. So that is what the Palestinian call, those are the parameters of the Palestinian call. And then you have other organizations where people want to target companies that are benefiting from occupation particularly. So it's looking at products from the settlements and boycotting those products specifically. It's looking at arms manufacturers. It's looking at, again, Caterpillar as a well-established campaign where the D9 bulldozers are being used to destroy Palestinian homes and lives in the occupied territories. So there are those issues, and they will, you know, and these were issues that I wasn't part of really the anti-apartheid campaign. You know, I did make sure as a teenager that those products didn't come into my home, but I wasn't sort of actively organizing with people. But I have looked at the history a bit, and it's my understanding that those differences were there in South African apartheid as well. Not, there wasn't agreement on tactics, strategic choices that people made all the time. But as with the Palestinian call, there is the basic agreement that international law must be respected and the occupation must end. And that is the basis of agreement there.
The supporters of Israel are known to launch the charge of anti-Semitism against most critical response to Israeli state policies that is motivated by intent or by unconsciously by some hatred of Jews. And this must be something that when churches faced with a charge of this, that must be, particularly in Christian churches, there must be a great deal of anxiety about that. What sort of responses did you hear discussed at the conference in terms of these kind of charges being made against people who are trying to use nonviolent methods of economic pressure to bring about Israeli compliance with international law and major United Nations resolutions?
Well, I'd like to first share my own sort of personal experience with that, and then two reflections from people at this conference. And so, you know, I've been working in sort of Palestine solidarity, calling for respect for Palestinian human rights for about 5 years. And so that involves standing with a banner or being out leafleting and, you know, leafleting before people even read the leaflet to know what it is that I'm saying or what position I take on this issue. You know, I've been called anti-Semitic, I've been called a Nazi, I've been called a supporter of Hitler. And that's not fun. You don't, you know, it's uncomfortable. You don't want to hear that. You don't want to have people yelling those things at you. And so there were moments where I thought, what am I doing standing out on this street? But that never came from a place of that I, from a moral perspective, that I morally shouldn't be out here. It came from personally being uncomfortable about it. And so you just develop a thicker skin about it. I'm self-respecting in my support for Palestinian human rights and in my opposition to anti-Semitism. And I know that about myself, and I know that about the people that I work with and the positions that I support. So it's again, it's still never fun to be yelled at, but it is easier to be out on the street and to know within myself that I am being morally responsible and that we have a responsibility to stand up to injustice. And so at this conference, this was a question that was raised. And so one example, Michael Pierce, who is the former primate of the Anglican Church, gave his personal account of these charges. And, you know, he told a very personal story of hearing what anti-Semitism is around his dinner table as a young man from a member of his family. And, you know, he says from that experience, he knows very clearly what anti-Semitism is. And when he is charged with it, he does not let it dislodge, disempower, or disorient him. And he just keeps doing the work that he knows needs to be done in the cause of peace and justice. And there was also another man that spoke, David Wildman, and I believe he is part of the Methodist Church, but I'm not certain of his church affiliation. But he was there speaking as a member of the U.S. campaign against Israeli occupation. And he was asked this question, and he asked us to spend less time responding to these spurious charges and to spend more time doing the work that needs to be done. That these are diversionary tactics, much like, he considered sort of Jewish-Christian dialogue groups, that these are just intended to bog us down in these discussions and not move ahead with the work that needs to be done on a clear understanding of peace and justice.
Well, thank you very much for coming in this morning, Erica.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Erica Lammercraft. She's a member of Canada-Palestine Support Network. She's also active in the Wall Must Fall campaign, and that campaign currently is discussing the tactic of economic sanctions. And if you'd like to become involved in this campaign, you can check out the website, www.thewallmustfall.ca. The Wall Must Fall, all one word.